Under the radar means hearing about things you didn't know you needed to know until you hear them.
It's a serious look.
You hear about the issues that don't get the attention they deserve.
Under the radar doesn't get caught up in the day-to-day.
Surfacing issues that are not talked about in mainstream media.
I think it's something that connects us to each other.
Under the radar is all about discovery.
I can be guaranteed voices I haven't heard before.
But also the questions.
Under the radar is one step ahead.
I'm Callie Crossley. This week on Under the Radar with Callie Crossley, COVID-19 exacerbated the national hunger crisis across the country. In Massachusetts, the number of households struggling with food insecurity more than doubled, from about 8% pre-COVID to a record high of 19% during the pandemic. Emergency food access programs, food pantries, and even targeted pandemic food subsidies did not eliminate the hunger emergency. That inspired some communities across the state to install community refrigerators filled with food donated by neighbors and local businesses, a lifesaver for so many.
I would say probably half to three quarters of my nutrition does come from here, though.
Today, with food prices continuing to soar, 10 active community fridges are operating in the greater Boston area. Later in the show, they are best known as masters of the court, the basketball court. NBA players are sports superstars and increasingly style mavens.
And I just realized that we were really in a moment where NBA fashion was in the zeitgeist.
From t-shirts and jeans to fashion trendsetters, a new book profiles the fashion of NBA players. But first, joining me, Megan Ramette, an organizer for the Alston Brighton Community Fridges. Hi, Megan.
Hi, Callie. It's a pleasure to be here with you today.
Also with me, Maria Ravelli, an organizer of Woo Fridge from Worcester, Massachusetts. Hello, Maria.
Hi. Thank you so much for including us in this conversation.
I'm glad to have both of you, and an important conversation it is. So let's first set the table more broadly. How did the idea of community fridges come to be in general, not just in Massachusetts, but in general, Megan?
That's a great question. I think that community fridges, you know, are a direct response to hunger in people's neighborhoods and communities. One of the most common questions that we've been asked over the last almost 4 years now is, what is a refrigerator doing on the sidewalk? And I think to a lot of people, it may not be the first solution that comes to mind to addressing hunger in the neighborhood, but it's shown to be an incredibly effective one. It's a freestanding outdoor refrigerator that provides 24/7 access to not only food, but body care items, infant formula, cold weather clothing in the colder temperatures. And I think that community fridges really came about when neighbors see the need that their fellow neighbors have for food and other items.
Maria, what would you add to that?
It's, you know, it's a new thing for a lot of us to see, but something that we always really like to remind ourselves and kind of we ground our work in is the understanding that mutual aid and this idea of just sharing food and exchanging, you know, resources with your neighbor is not a new practice. It is something that predates colonialism. It is something that is like instinctually deep inside everybody. The need to see our communities thriving, the want to have, healthy, bountiful neighborhoods and communities, like those are wants that everybody has. And a community fridge is just like this tangible thing that, we're starting to see more, which is a beautiful thing, but it is a response. It is a form of resilience, and it is a response because of, laws and different programmings that are just not there to protect us.
Now, these are volunteer organizations. So I want to hear from both of you about how you each individually came to be a part of, for example, for you, Megan, the Fridge in Alston Brighton.
I started getting involved with the Alston Fridge in the fall of 2020. I actually saw a picture come up on my Instagram feed of two neighbors hard styling in front of a fridge in front of a very beloved restaurant in Alston called Grasshopper. And like many people, I was curious to see a refrigerator on the sidewalk. My curiosity was piqued. And when I learned more about the project, as I had been learning more about mutual aid in general on my own, I thought, what an incredible opportunity for me to get involved. And since then, you know, I've done everything from helping to do food rescue, temperature checks, cleaning of the fridge, even up to like relocating a fridge, going to pick one up in a friend's pickup truck and moving it to my basement for storage and then moving it out to the sidewalk when it was ready. So for me, seeing a group and helping build a group where we all agree that we're operating under this tenet of take what you need, leave what you can. You know, we're recognizing that everybody has and knows their own needs and wants and what capacity they have to help. We come to the fridge and we're not making anything transactional. We're not operating under limited hours. We're not making people fill out paperwork. We're not having people meet certain criteria for them to receive what they want and what they need.
Maria Ravelli of the Woo Fridge, Fridges in Worcester, Massachusetts. Now, you helped start the first fridge in Worcester?
Before the pandemic, my partner and I were, one of our favorite things to do was just to kind of always provide like material outreach. So it would just, at that time, it kind of just looked like, you know, cooking meals for folks when we had extra and just kind of driving it around the community. So once the pandemic started, a lot of the feedback that we were hearing from neighbors is that they were, the food pantries that they were so used to getting food from, their hours had shortened, or just there was, you know, some different restrictions for safety that were put in place that made it more difficult for folks to be able to go to these food pantries. So we started just kind of brainstorming and looking into different options. And similar to what Megan said, we were just kind of scrolling on Instagram and we were like, what are these community fridges? Does Worcester have one? And it just kind of went from there. So we just put out a call to action, you know, on some different like community forums online and saying, this is kind of an idea that we have. Is anybody willing to kind of jump on board? And we were really lucky that there was our very first host location. Saket, the owner of Fantastic Pizza in Maine South, Worcester, reached out and said, you know, eagerly, yes, this is something that, you know, I want in front of my restaurant. This is something I would love to support. So we were very lucky that things kind of, you know, flowed pretty easily for us when it got started. Not to say that the overall organizing was easy work, but actually getting it, you know, up and running kind of fell naturally, which was nice.
Well, we sent a member of our team to Lee out by the some of the fridges, and this was outside of St. Matthew's Church specifically, where she interacted with a couple of people who regularly use the fridges. And so here is Frank's video talking about how regularly he goes.
Well, there's certain fridges that I go to regularly because I go to places there. Like I go to a meeting here, so I'd stop here beforehand. It's kind of strange because I don't know if I want people seeing me going into the free food pantry. I know all these people, and they might rib me about it, but you know, I'm on disability, and you know, the price of food, the price of everything, same price, half the size, the whole thing that everybody else is going through. So I stop here once in a while. There's three or four that I go to on a regular basis.
We also talked quite a bit to Doug Hawthorne, who is from Westfield, Massachusetts, but he's been living in Worcester for 6 months. He was homeless before, and I thought he had an interesting take on why these fridges are so needed. So here he is talking about what need is when you talk about people who are accessing these fridges.
Being needy is different for everyone, and some people don't realize how needy some people are. You know, they're making a certain percentage less than they're used to, so they think they're needy, but there's other people who literally have nothing.
I wanted to pick up from what Doug says, because these are the folks that you're seeing who are accessing these fridges. They are really down to desperation, many of them who, and this is a gap, you know, there are not very many of them in Greater Boston. There's only 10, but they really serve a huge purpose for a lot of folks who are feeling and are going home to empty cupboards. So, Maria, talk about that a bit, if you would.
Yeah, so honestly, our experience is there's such a range to it. So we, you know, I've connected with folks that are unhoused and are going to the community fridges for every, you know, for every meal, checking it multiple times a day, because that's just kind of, it's the fridge that's within their community. So they're able to kind of check that one more frequently. I've connected with families that are going to, kind of like what Doug said, going to the food pantries and using the community fridges just to kind of make ends meet. And I've also connected with folks that are, you know, volunteers there and bringing food, and they're saying, wow, like, Trader Joe's just gave you a pallet full of, you know, chocolate chip cookies. I'm going to take some boxes for my kids' school. What we always want to center is recognizing that within our communities, there is abundance. There's not a lack of food. There's not a lack of resources. It just takes some community planning. It takes a little creativity to kind of make sure that food is getting redistributed to, you know, folks that need it, folks that want it. But the food itself is abundant, and the fridges, you know, serve a huge range of neighbors to make sure that folks that want food get it. And it's not necessarily this, like, you know, resource that is only restricted if you have, you know, absolutely no other means of getting food. It's just, if you're in the area and you pass by a fridge and you want to, like, grab a little snack, like, go for it. It's normalizing exchanging free food, because we are organizing with the understanding that the enemy is not the neighbor. The enemy is not, you know, that there is, like, this lack of food. There is so much abundance in our communities. So it's really just kind of normalizing, how do we share that abundance?
Megan, what do you say?
I think Maria phrased it perfectly. I think we share the idea that, you know, when we act in collaboration with each other, when we reject competition, when we build community, that's how community thrives. And I think that, you know, Frank highlighting on the stigma of food access is a real experience that many people have when they're visiting the fridge. You know, we see a tremendous amount of turnover in our fridges. We do multiple checks a day to make sure that the fridge is clean, that it's as stocked as it can be. And, you know, things that we see that are stocked in the morning often don't last through the afternoon, and they certainly don't last through the evening. You know, during 2020, 2021, I think by my count, there were about 30 active fridges throughout the state of Massachusetts. And while it's really important to talk about the positive impact that plenty of fridges have had and this abundance of aid, I think it's also really important to focus on the fact that now there are 10 fridges, and as much as community fridges really help their communities and are such a staple and really providing that net for people who are using them, when fridges go away, that's violence to the community. You know, it's a sudden pulling back of something that was seen as stable and filling in those gaps for people. We've experienced that with the Alston Brighton fridges when our fridge was evicted from Grasshopper. We experienced it again in Brighton when our fridge was evicted from Oliveira's Deli. And, you know, these are landlords coming in, making the decision that suddenly they don't want this fridge in front of the property that they own, not realizing the really deep and wide and harmful repercussions of that, that sudden severing of critical access to food.
What happened after you lost those two fridges? That you were you able to find other places that people were more receptive to allowing you to site a fridge?
Thankfully, we were. The Brighton Alston Congregational Church stepped up, and they have been our host for the Brighton fridge for the last nearly 3 years. So, you know, we are extremely grateful for the businesses that were able to host us for the time that they could, knowing that it was not their decision to have this project end. It was, the decision was made above them by the landlord or the property manager. It has been very difficult for us to get a fridge back into Alston. You know, we're not giving up on Alston. We love Alston, but it has been a real challenge. And one of the things about fridges is they're a precarious project. I think a lot of us in the Fridge Collective can relate to that, especially as renters, knowing that, you know, we don't have that sense of permanence in the community as much as we would like to. You know, we hope that the fridges will stay for as long as they can, be active, be full. But the reality is that we could come to the fridge for a fridge check and the fridge is missing, or the fridge has been unplugged and shuttled towards the curb. That's definitely been one of the difficult aspects of organizing the community fridges, is just hoping for them to make as much of an impact as they can.
Now, Maria Ravelli, do you think that is because, aside from the landlords who may not have interest in having it, one of the fridges sited on their property, is there a general feeling that maybe these aren't necessary? I'm just trying to understand, because overall, I've heard about support from local businesses and, of course, local neighbors. So I'm just curious, are there people who are just like, you know, go to a food pantry. We don't really need this fridge as an extra thing.
I would say the majority of folks recognize that there is a need for like this type of resource in our communities. I think the reality is that something that is open access in this way, which, you know, a food pantry is not, right? A food pantry has limited hours, there's staff, there's kind of procedures and things like that to get the food. So the reality is that a truly open access community run resource is messy, right? It's messy when like the physical mess, like the literal mess of trash that might be left or food spills. It's messy in terms of working through neighborly conflict when you're there. It's messy in terms of you know, trying to get more food there. It's just, there's so many layers to it because we're working against this like greater system that makes it incredibly difficult for grassroots projects like this to exist, let alone be maintained, you know? So we experienced that too. We had one of our very first fridge, the one in Maine South, was closed because there was countless complaints from people in the neighborhood about trash. And, you know, regardless of how much organizing we went around it, we weren't able to keep up with it. We had the only privately funded trash can within it. I think it's like a 6 or 8 block radius from that location. And this fridge was located where there was churches and restaurants and schools and bars. Like there is, you know, there is life and community happening there. How was that the only trash can there? You know, bringing it up to the city, and the city, you know, kind of 10 toes down was saying, we can't come up with a trash solution for this situation. And because of that, the fridge, you know, inevitably had to close. So I don't think it's because people don't recognize that there's not a need for it. I think it's because we are, you know, it is incredibly difficult to maintain grassroots work in, you know, kind of under the structures that we're currently living under.
If you're just tuning in, this is Under the Radar with Callie Crossley. I'm Callie Crossley. And here with me are Megan Remet, an organizer for the Alston Brighton Community Fridges, Maria Ravelli, an organizer for Woo Fridge from Worcester, Massachusetts. We're discussing food insecurity and community fridges in Massachusetts. So again, one of the other things that Doug brings up, you know, which is something that people don't want to talk about, is open access. And that can bring people who just want to take advantage. And here he is talking about the abuse that sometimes comes with the fridges.
With all charity, you're going to get some abuse. And there's people that literally come here in their nice brand new cars. And I'm not just saying it because they have cars. I had a guy sitting here one day bragging about how he had just bought a brand new, you know, 60-something thousand dollar truck, paid cash for it, rents his house out, but yet he comes here and fills it. Like, I actually shamed him one day. He came and grabbed 8 gallons of milk out and put them in his car. That guy supposedly goes and sells it at bodegas and restaurants.
You know, that just makes people mad, you know. And I'm sure it upsets some of your generous donors to know that there are folks who would take advantage. But of course, the majority of folks need this. So it's just something you have to cope with, I guess, Megan.
Yeah, that is definitely a conversation that we've had within our fridge collective. Is there are times where, you know, 2 fridge volunteers will come by the fridge in a pretty short amount of time and realize that, yes, we did have 5 gallons of milk, or we had 8 boxes of cornbread, and or we had 10 packs of tampons, and suddenly all of those resources are gone within an hour. And I think importantly, we recognize that, you know, that is a reality, that for some people that might be a response to the lack of food in their lives, is to take what they can when they see it. And we can't blame them. We also, unfortunately, can't address that beyond just making sure that the fridge is as full as it can be so that everybody can access it. And that's why we really come back to, you know, this core tenet of take what you need, leave what you can. But it's also, you know, we don't come to the community fridge with the assumption that neighbors are going to abuse it. That's not how we see our neighbors. That's not the hope that we have for each other. When it does happen, you know, we can discuss it, and then we can just put out a call for, hey, the fridge is really empty today. Is there anybody who can come by with a home-cooked meal that's labeled correctly? Is there anybody that can come by with juice or popsicles or produce?
Well, I don't want that comment from Doug to be the only one that people remember him by, because he is very grateful for the community support. And by that, he talks about individuals and businesses. And here he is talking about the generosity of the community members who stock the fridges.
There's a lot of people that literally just come randomly and drop things off. Most of them go and buy the things specifically to drop them off. Every week I meet a few people that are just stopping randomly to, you know, like they were grocery shopping and got extra of whatever and they bring it over.
I mean, that's the essence of what you're trying to provide. But I want to point out that as generous as everybody is and as much mission-driven as you organizers are, you can't solve hunger with this. Does that get you frustrated, or how do you deal with that? Or do you just say, you know what, this is the reality. I'm going to do my piece to what I can do to make the gap smaller, and that's it. And I realize that the larger issue cannot be solved in this way, but this is one way to help people. How do you feel about that, Megan?
You know, I definitely come to this project with knowing that, you know, overnight I'm not going to solve this, and a single fridge isn't going to solve this, 10 fridges isn't going to solve this, but what we are doing in the meantime is extremely important. You know, this fridge is helping feed neighbors, provide neighbors with gloves and socks in the wintertime, hydration in the summer, resources for more community fridges and other ways to get food. And I also know that, you know, there are bigger impacts of a community fridge and this kind of grassroots organizing. It's a strengthening of the community. And that is something that I think is one of the most important takeaways of the Community Fridge Project, is that, you know, when we are coming together and supporting a community fridge, we are practicing mutual aid and we are rejecting charity models. We're no longer looking at things from this binary of helper and the person being helped. We're being in community with each other, and that is something that is really, really important to me.
Maria, I want you to add to that, and I want to add that these fridges don't accept any financial support from the state. So when we talk about volunteerism and community-based and giving, you know, that's exactly what's happening here. But yet, as you know, you're a small piece of a larger puzzle. And I'd like to get your take on trying to fill a very large gap with a very small response.
Yeah, so I definitely want to touch on the not accepting funding. So we don't accept funding from the state, the city, or any entities that cause harm to our communities. Those are, you know, three places that we have had to kind of consistently say no to and set boundaries, because as I'm sure you know, as soon as something good is happening in communities, it is so easy for, you know, city officials to kind of leech on and say, look at this, like celebrating the resilience of the people as a response to like harm that was essentially caused by, you know, lack of being protected by them. So understanding that a community fridge is completely a band-aid to, you know, some of these like greater symptoms that are happening. And we really want to encourage city officials and state officials to focus on creating affordable and equitable housing solutions for people, because that is why there is such an increase of people accessing the fridges. So instead of accepting funding and resources from city and state officials, we really say, you know what, we are here to keep our communities safe and kind of keep it trucking with, you know, with what we're doing. What we need you guys to do is really focus your energy and attention into, you know, finally kind of figuring out this housing crisis, so that community fridges don't need to exist, right? Right now, the way community fridges are operating are very much as this, this like social safety net, which is fine, and kind of understanding that's the place of a fridge right now. But getting to a place where this can solely be a place where we can just share, you know, a meal if we have extra, and not having to hustle so much because we know that there's such a great need. Having to organize because we know there is a need is so heavy on our hearts, right? It's so heavy on everyone's hearts to have to do that. So that's, you know, absolutely why we do not like to, you know, organize at all kind of within that world, because we really need them to just focus their attention and making sure that we don't have to organize anymore.
A couple more questions for you two that I think a lot of people listening to this would want to know. Personally, what makes you do this work? I mean, Maria, you're not even from Worcester originally. So what drove you and drives you to do this work?
I always kind of joke that I am personally fueled by equal parts rage and love. That's definitely, I think, what's fueling this. I don't know if you've had a chance to stop at a fridge, but really the intentionality and the love that goes into just participating in these things, it's such life-changing work. And I think it's one of those things where I'm not from Worcester. I've lived here for, you know, 10 years. So I'm comfortable kind of, you know, claiming this as my community. We've settled roots here, and we're raising our child here. So but I think there's something so beautiful about connecting with neighbors in this way. And I can't say that I would be able to connect with them in the same way if it wasn't for the community fridges. So definitely rage and love is fueled, and just kind of, community and connection is what kind of keeps me coming back.
You know, I agree completely with Maria, and hilariously enough, I have a book on my nightstand right now called Love and Rage by Lama Rod Owens. So I really resonate with that. And I also find a deep sense of joy in building community. I love to, you know, think of the community fridge as, you know, an extension of like my kitchen table. So when I'm making a big batch of soup, why not make a little bit more and, you know, box it up and bring it to the fridge? I feel really strongly about mutual aid. I love to read texts about it. Peter Kropotkin's Conquest of Bread comes to mind. And, you know, there's a central theme in that book of well-being for all by all, and taking the time to really ground yourself in community, talk to your neighbors, make those connections. Yeah, that is really sustaining to me.
And last question to both of you, what is the one thing that you want people to take away about community fridges?
Look at a community fridge and spend some time thinking about, you know, how this refrigerator on the sidewalk does so much more than just hold food. You know, it's an anchor to the community. It is changing people's perceptions of how they can make an impact in their community and with their neighbors. So I would really encourage people to get involved, reach out, ask questions, bring a meal and take a meal.
Something that the community fridges have taught me is, you know, I would be the first person to, you know, be at the fridge being like, share with your neighbors and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, wait, I don't actually know my neighbors. And I've never actually physically shared a meal with like my literal neighbor. So it's made me feel more comfortable kind of building those types of connections. And now, you know, when I get some extra food, you know, just literally walking it to my next door neighbor. If they're sick, you know, they're bringing me some soup. And that kind of like exchange is something that I didn't feel comfortable doing 5 years ago, right? I was definitely operating with the stigma of kind of like, ooh, this is just like me and my bubble and my family and my house. And the community fridges have made me feel so much more comfortable kind of trusting others and just kind of recognizing that we are really also interdependent on each other for survival. So really learning to lean on each other, like truly and truly, and thinking what that means to us in practice.
Well, I thank both of you for joining me in this conversation.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
Megan Remet is an organizer for the Alston Brighton Community Fridges, and Maria Ravelli is an organizer of Woo Fridge in Worcester, Massachusetts. Coming up, March Madness wraps up this week as top college basketball players compete for the coveted championship. Some of the most talented collegiate players will go on to join the pros in the NBA. No doubt all of them want to play like superstars, LeBron James, Jason Tatum, and Steph Curry, to name a few. But more and more, they want to dress like them. How NBA players became fashion icons. That's next. This is Under the Radar with Callie Crossley. I'm Callie Crossley.